It's the Roll Around the Barrel Vintage Baseball Podcast.
Whee! Inconceivable!
I have in my midst another big fish. I've had some big fish here today, and this guy's in the top five big fish of all time, Vintage Baseball.
I'll take it.
You want to hear my top five? Yeah. Top five big... I can't do that. I'll get too many letters while they didn't make the top five. Manager, captain, skipper of the Canton Corn Shuckers. Defending world tournament champion? I have to say that with a question mark because you are?
Not anymore.
It's Mike Marbles-Feeney. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. Glad to have you on the microphone again.
Happy to be here.
You know, what I like about you is you're always up for whatever I want to do. You make me feel important.
You are. You are important.
Mike, I don't know how long this is going to take. You're gonna be here for as long as you want to be. Just tell me when you're done. There's a couple of things I want to talk about before we talk about today's events.
Okay. What do you got in mind?
If you go back in the archives of the Roll Around the Barrel podcast, you will find Mike Feeney is my first episode?
I believe so, yeah.
Was certainly at my first taping. I don't remember. There was a lot of amazing things that came out of that podcast, especially how you used to be a dancer for the women type folk. And people still bring that up to me, by the way. They're right. Like, we like your podcast. We like when you talk about them more than just vintage baseball and what they did. We had no idea Mike Feeney was a stripper.
It was just such a small period of my life. It's not really that big of a deal.
Right. And but there were things we didn't get to. And maybe the only thing I'll remember off that small list and is fitting for this time of the year, I would love to talk about your haunt.
Yeah.
How it started, how you started it at your parents' house, and how it's evolved to where it is today. And then I want you to whore your cell phone and pump it up and pub it to everybody that's going to listen to this to come watch it. Start at the beginning.
Okay, so kind of started when I was around 16 or so because I couldn't really trick, or it wasn't socially acceptable to trick or treat as much. So I started.
Wait. Did you trick or treat up until you were 15?
Yes. I should also chime in, once I've opened my haunted house at 25, we had a rainout and I went trick or treating on Halloween at 25. So.
My God. What was your favorite piece of candy you got that night?
Probably Kit Kats.
Oh, Kit Simple. Kats. Have you had a key lime pie Kit Kat yet?
I have not. I'm not that adventurous.
Oh, amazing. It hits me in the feels. Okay, so 16 years old. What are you doing?
Just kind of started doing more of a Halloween display because I always enjoyed Halloween. And it was like, trick-or-treating was the big event centered around that. And it no longer really could be. I saw that that wasn't really where it was taking me in my adulthood life. I started just doing a display at my parents' house, and it just kind of kept growing and growing. Started just kind of in the garage, like a little, just some tarps up and stuff, and eventually I ended up getting some walls from somebody who had them in a storage unit who was just trying to get rid of them, and it expanded to the driveway, and then over the next couple of years it kind of went around from the driveway to the garage, through the backyard, and out the other side of the backyard, and it kind of got to a point where my parents were like, this is becoming too much, no more. And I actually had a friend from high school who had previously said he had acted in my home haunt and stuff. And he's like, my dad has this property and, you know, you could probably use it for the haunt. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, you don't really know what I'm trying to do with this kind of thing. And sure enough, we were able to get it and we're still renting that same property. And we've expanded from, you know, a driveway haunt onto 5 acres of land in Romulus, and we're enjoying it.
Are you having problems with employees because of COVID?
Not so much. The majority of my acting staff is friends and friends of friends who are willing to work for little to no pay. So it really hasn't been too big of an issue on us. But thankfully, they've all been pretty loyal and not really in it for the money from the get-go, which has been really cool, too, because having those people involved in it because they want to be creates a better experience, I think, for the guest.
So first year, you're on this new plot of land. How many people were working?
Typically, we'd probably have around 15 people per night.
But that was the first year.
First year, yeah.
15 people on staff staff.
Yeah, including like parking and tickets and stuff.
And now what is it?
We haven't expanded too much. We're probably closer up to between 20 and 25, depending on the night, between our entire staff from parking to box office to actors.
So tell me how you've grown, how many people came through the turnstiles on the first year?
Yeah, first year, I think we had, my numbers could be off slightly because I don't remember offhand, but I think it was just shy of around 900 people the first year.
Okay.
And this past year with COVID, we kind of really blew up, and we had closer to 5,000 people.
Holy Moses.
Yeah, I mean, that's throughout the span of mid-September through October, but Fridays, Saturdays. And so our busy nights, we were doing 500-600 people in a night within a three-and-a-half-hour span, which was pretty hectic.
Doing what you did the entire season to doing that in one night every night. Holy
pretty close, yeah. There were a couple nights where we had close to what we did that first season in one night, yeah.
So I know you keep track of, because the Detroit area has a ton of haunts,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
So there's got to be, there's like a publication you can pick up, I think you pick it up for free, that lists them all, and then there's rankings and ratings and all of that nonsense. Have you gotten any pub yet?
Yeah, we've gotten a little bit. The big one, newspaper-wise, you're probably referring to is called the Fear Finder. And that's kind of the big newspaper around town. Their ads are way too expensive and have been out of our budget and even still are a little bit. And plus, I don't really see the value in the print publication like it used to be kind of thing. As everything leans more towards social media.
Sure, absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, we've been pretty decent so far. I mean, they had a fan-voted event this fall for Click on Detroit, the news station, and we ranked fifth, but we made it onto the rankings board, so that counts as something. It's one thing that I always find kind of silly about haunted houses is everyone you look at is ranked number one in the state. I'm like, I don't know how our six haunted houses are ranked number one in the state. So we're thinking about taking this not ranked number one thing and running with it as our advertisement, as we are not the number one haunted house in the state. Come with your expectations low, and hopefully you'll have a good time.
So you're bringing in 500 to 600 people a night.
On our busy nights, yeah.
When you're doing, when you were going to all these haunts in Detroit, you probably still do if you have free time.
Yes, when I can.
What are the top ones doing in a night?
Number-wise, I'd probably, some of the top ones in Michigan and kind of like the Metro Detroit area will put through probably between like 12 and maybe even 1,500 people in like their busiest night.
And a lot of those are like, they have much bigger areas to work with, like buildings.
Yes, correct. Yeah, there's a haunt near us that runs out of a former roller rink.
Oh, my God, that would be amazing.
It doesn't look like a roller rink anymore, but they have the size for it. It's just wide open. And, you look at them, and I hear their advertising budget, and their advertising budget is, you know, about 10 times our overall budget. And it's just absolutely insane the amount of money they're working with. So that's the competition we're up against, but we've had really good reviews. So.
Well, you know, another thing I like about you, boy, I am really just blowing smoke up your ass today.
I needed it after that loss earlier.
One of those things, you guys did lose. I mean, I'm not laughing that you lost, but it just doesn't happen very often. You're very passionate and you're very focused, and when you find something you have a passion for, you give it 110%, and that's just the way you're going to do it. Yeah. Or it's not going to be a passion, you're not going to deal with it.
Right, exactly.
So what are your hopes and dreams for your haunt?
I would love to just be able to make it my kind of career and have it be somewhat constant. I mean, I don't need to make a ton of money doing it, but if I can make enough to get by and that can kind of be what I do, I would love for that to be the situation where I can do a haunted house in the fall and just play baseball all summer long, and I still need to find a winter activity to do besides watch hockey, but that'll come up, I think.
Yes. Well, why can't you do winter haunts?
Well, we're a fully outdoor attraction, so that would be awful. But
why
if
can't
we
you
moved
do,
inside.
Why can't you do some sort of springtime haunt? Is it because it's too wet?
No, there are places that do. We've considered doing...
a Valentine's Day haunt.
I've seen them. They exist, and... I was actually stupid enough in the spring to actually think, and I was like, oh, we could open for Friday the 13th, August 13th, because it's August, our haunt's almost built, just, you know, maybe not completely ready, run a discounted rate, and then I saw it was World Tournament weekend, and I was like, oh, that Friday's probably not a great day to do it, considering I have a handful of guys on my team that helped me out as well. I was like, oh, it could be fun. Could get some vintage guys out to check it out.
How much do you got to tear down at the end of your season?
Unfortunately, all of it. We are technically temporary structures, according to the city of Romulus. So we don't have to deal with as many building permits because we're not a technical building because we're a temporary structure. So we don't have to deal with the sprinkler system and such with the size of our structures that we build. However, each year at the end of the season, we do have to tear everything down and rebuild from square one each year. So that is a bit of a pain and it's a little bit labor-intensive.
Well, it's a bit of a pain right now, but if you think about doing more, that has to be in your mind where you're like, oh, we got to tear that down if we do that idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometimes it's a little tough where you're like, oh, we're building this really cool thing and it's going to look great. And then, but we're tearing it apart. Is it going to look as great when we reassemble it next year kind of thing? One thing it has forced us to do, which I think has been beneficial, honestly, is not a lot of haunts change everything they do kind of thing. It's like, oh, we have our building, we have our haunts. Oh, we have three new rooms this year that look very similar to the ones they used to be. But considering we have to tear everything down and set everything up, it's like we might as well change our path and make it fresh and exciting since we have to start from square one each year.
So do you pick a theme? Is there a theme?
Yeah, we have a pretty much a, just kind of like an overlying theme, and it's kind of circled around the basically like this bus that broke down in the woods because we have a full-size bus that happened to be on the property in the woods already. And so it's kind of based around that where these kids got lost in the woods and you're trying to figure out what happened to them. And, you know, it's like you're going through this downtown district area, which is like an entertainment district, and then you venture out into the woods and you go through the camp, which is called Camp Zika, which is just solely based on the abundance of mosquitoes in the back lot of the woods and the Zika virus. And then after that, you're going through the woods and you realize things are a little bit crazy, and then there's a gas station, which is your kind of last chance for hope, and then you got to get to that and make sure everything's okay where it's not, and then that'll be the finale, okay. The grand finale.
And this changes every year?
Yeah, pretty much. That's the theme we're going with this year. The theme it's kind of been overlying for the last couple of years, and we just kind of expanded on it. We still have a lot of room to build on what we're currently doing, so that'll probably be our theme for a little while unless we come up with some brilliant ideas. So if you have any, send them my way.
I'm an idea man. I throw all my ideas at you. You've never latched onto one of them, so I don't see it happening at this point. Okay, at this point, tell everybody where they can go to see this, all your social media stuff, everything to do with the Deranged Haunt. Give everybody that information.
All right. Probably the best place to go first off is derangedhaunt.com. That's our website. We're also on Facebook, which is just Deranged Haunt. Please give us a like. We're trying to get to 5,000 before the season starts. We're like 4,700, so we're getting close. So hopefully those thousands of listeners you have here will help me out a little bit. We're also on Instagram at Deranged Haunt as well.
My listeners already know who you are and what you do, and they probably already like that page. But probably. You know what? Tell your friends. I do have a listener in France. If you're listening right now, I don't know what I just said to you. you can like that page for us. That'd be great. Okay, so let's talk about Mike. You don't want to talk about this. Mike, on a personal level, how did you play today personally?
I thought I did fine. It was my team that let me down.
Wow, here we go. Yeah, the big news, it came across ESPN. It was breaking news. Canton Corn Shuckers. Choke it off. No.
Pretty much.
You did not choke it off.
I didn't think it was that bad of a game.
It was a good game. And when you are playing close games and one thing can go one way or another to decide it, you guys tend to be on the winning side of that point in the match until today. Today you were not.
Yeah.
How did that match go from your point of view?
Well, like you said, those close matches, we've kind of been on the upside of them so many times. I think we've had 4 1-run games this year. We've been on the right side of it every time, so it was just a matter of time before our luck ran out. Just disappointing to happen on the biggest event. It was a really good game. I thought, you know, like every game, there's going to be some errors, and I think our errors just kind of came at more costly times in this one. We didn't really get the bats going, I think, as much as we needed to. It's like anytime you're playing Bay City, you know you're going to need to score runs. And we put up 11 today, which, you know, wasn't bad. But, you know, knowing that team and knowing the power that they have and how sharp they are on defense, and they're not going to make mistakes, you kind of got to get your bats moving a little bit. And I definitely think that new foul ball rule at Greenfield Village this year is just, you know, it didn't come into play too much in the game, but I think it's just in the back of everybody's heads, and it's kind of got them swinging a little bit differently. It's like, you know, you got a left-handed hitter that's an all-time pull hitter, and now those singles are gone for him, so he's trying to push the ball, which is a little bit out of his comfort zone. I like to go the other way, and, you know, I'm doing weird stuff, like trying to fair foul and just do whatever it takes to get on base kind of thing.
Yeah, I've asked quite a few people that have come through here about if you noticed any changes in the way, and, you know, you get both sides. So, but you're saying you did, well, meal ticket. Who called him moneymaker? Somebody always calls him moneymaker. And who are you talking about? The poker player? And maybe it was Kid Garcia.
Oh, possibly.
Yeah. So meal ticket had to change his strategies, and I don't know. He's so strong, he could still hit the tree.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the goal, and I don't know. Just didn't seem to work out the way we had it all chalked up to be. And
was that your first match?
No, that was our second match. First match we played against the La Di Da this morning, and that went exactly as planned. So,
what was the plan?
To just beat them by as much as we could. I got a text message from, you know, and there was a group chat going around. I might be spreading confidential information here.
Sweet.
But I saw somebody from the village who kind of chimed in. I think they were taking a shot, maybe at Walker Tavern. That was like, oh, you know, in the world tournament, you never know. Like, you know, you know, too big of a lead is never a thing, you know. 12 runs isn't enough when the La Di Da's came back and beat the Wheels after they blew about a 12-run lead. So we took that as a sign to, oh, we're playing the La Di Da's. We got to run it up more than 12. So,
well, today the Columbus Capitals proved that there is a lead that's too too big to overcome. As I don't want to talk about it anymore. I've talked about it to death. We're not angry.
That's good.
I think that's the theme. So, Mike, this is the part of the show where I'm going to pin you down for some, hang on a second. Oh, there we go. How come I can't think of the word? We're going to talk about tomorrow's matches, and you're going to predict. That's the word.
Okay.
I tell you people all the time that listen to this, I am not good at this. The word is predict. Predictions. Here we go. Third class championship.
Okay.
It's the La Di Da's and the Nationals and the Columbus Capitals and Chelsea. Who do you have coming out of that?
All right. And we're going off of who I think will win, not who I want to win kind of thing.
Well, you can define it either way, but you can only pick one. You can't be wishy-washy and go, well, I want them to win, but I think they'll win.
I'll go with who I think will win. Okay. I think the third-class championship will be the Columbus Capitals.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Second-class championship, you have to imagine you're in a world where Canton isn't in it.
Oh.
And it's a three-team round-robin. It's the Rockford Rogues, Drover Town Black Flags, and the Walker Tavern Wheels.
Walker Tavern Wheels.
Okay. I just want everybody to know out there that listens, there's kind of an inside joke with myself that I have, because every time I say Walker, one time I say Walker Tavern Wheels, the next time I say Walker Wheels Tavern, I change it every other time. If you haven't noticed, go back, because I don't really know which way it is, and I know I'm getting it right half the time.
It's Walker, I can speak from playing on this team for 5 years, it's Walker Tavern Wheels.
Okay.
And I hear a lot of people, I mean, it bothers me, I think, more than anybody else on that team, but I hear a lot of people refer to them as Walker. And Walker, Michigan is probably 2.5 hours west of them, where they are based out of Walker Tavern, which is in Brooklyn, Michigan, and their team name is the Wheels because they were a stagecoach shop. Stop.
Okay. So. I'd like to say I'm going to remember that. And then, of course, the first class championship. I want to see how you tap dance around this. It's Bay City, Flat Rock, Saginaw, and the Ganymedes.
It's going to be an interesting matchup, and I'm really excited to see it. I think, you know, it's not always good losing. It's never a fun feeling to lose, but I am really excited to see that bracket play out, and I'm glad that my matches don't overlap with any of them, so I can watch the semis and the championship tomorrow. So the first match is, what, Saginaw?
You're going to get
Saginaw and Ganymedes?
Yeah.
I think Saginaw is going to take that just from experience. Oregon was really mashing the ball today from what I saw. But, I mean, Saginaw was as well. I think Saginaw just kind of has that experience and that edge in the tournament where some of these teams that haven't, you know, been in that semifinal match as much might have a little bit of nerves going on. But, I mean, Saginaw's been there. They've done it all, and I can see them walking out of that one. And then the other match is
the Bay City and Flat Rock.
Bay City and Flat Rock. That's going to be another one. I think that one might be I want to see Bay City take it. I think they're going to take it. Flat Rock can mash the ball, but Bay City's defense is just so sharp. You know, playing them today, you know, we really got to see it firsthand. And a big thing with Bay City that's making me want to, like, really pull for them in this tournament is they're using guys, you know, at this tournament that we've seen all season long. You know, we've seen them on multiple trips. You know, we've seen them out in Gettysburg. We played them in Flat Rock. We've played them at their place. And, you know, it's pretty much the same 10, 11 guys everywhere you go. And I think it's really good that they're kind of meshing together as a team and really working well together as a team. And, you know, Flat Rock can hit the ball, but I think Bay City's defense is just too sharp, and Bay City's going to take that match. So then it's Bay City, Saginaw in the championship, and as always, Bay City will choke and Saginaw will win.
There you go. You heard it here. Mike, you came in here with a different kind of attitude today. This is what happens when Canton loses. Is Mike's just like, screw the rest of yous. I don't even care anymore. This is what we're going to do. It hurts me.
Now, that being said, I really am pulling for Bay City to win it. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, man, throwing salt on the fire or whatever the sayings are. That's intense, dude.
Well, I mean, a lot of the guys on Saginaw I haven't seen in that uniform in like 3 or 4 years. So, you know, I'm really pulling for Bay City. You know, they got the same 10, 11 guys that have been playing together all season, and hopefully it all just meshes together and they can do something they haven't done. I mean, you played for Bay City for a long time, right? How many championship matches have they been to?
Six? I want to say six. Five or six.
Yeah, we were debating that earlier and we couldn't figure out the answer, and I didn't want to bring it up to Silverback and ask him how many times he's lost the championship game.
We're the Buffalo Bills of vintage baseball.
But I really am hoping they take it. Like, based on the way they played us today, I mean, it was just spectacular baseball. And, you know, I really hope that they can take that tomorrow.
Yeah, they're good right now. That I saw. absolutely. Well, yeah, Mike, anything you want to talk about while we're recording?
No, I mean.
Any questions, well, there comments, criticisms?
There was a thing that came up on your episode with Dirty Pirate. Oh. And you were talking about the dead ball out in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on, what do you mean dead ball? Because the ball's not being called dead differently from the rule.
Okay, you know, Mike, dead ball, you know what I mean. You know what I mean. Listen, when it's a gentleman's two-step lead.
Yes.
That ball's dead.
Yeah.
For all intents and purposes, that ball's dead.
And you're talking stealing on a muff where you cannot run until the pitcher makes an error.
Right. Yeah. That ball's dead until there's an error.
Right. Yeah. Not technically dead, but nobody's advancing.
Even today, you can get all you want on the lead, but you can't leave until it touches something. That ball's dead.
In the air, yeah.
To an extent.
To an extent, yeah.
It's all up for debate. But what's not up for debate is the way they played it back then. None of that nonsense existed.
True. I will completely agree with that the history is incorrect, that, you know, teams are playing with the two-stride lead, which I have never seen any documentation or have been told about any documentation that proves that to be true. And same thing with the only stealing on a muff. You know, it's like we went out to play in Gettysburg for the first time. We really got to play those unrestricted rules. As much as we hate the baseball they play with, that game, we loved it. And, you know, we had a lot of fun playing the unrestricted version. And, you know, I know not every team is kind of built for that style the way we are. But, I mean, I think in a way you're somewhat doing a disservice to, you know, the history of baseball by not recreating the game accurately.
We're on the same page. If I just think Midwest teams, and it probably happens more than just the Midwest. It's just what I know.
Yes. Yeah.
Some teams are making alterations to the rules that fits what they have on their roster, and then they just stick with it. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older and more bitter, but I'm feeling the same way. And it's like just about the historical stuff. And I mean, I know my club isn't completely historically accurate as well. You know, it's things that we picked up from other teams when we started that we just haven't been able to shake it. Like our uniforms, you know, we're wearing the pillbox caps, which came in like the 1880s. We're playing 1860s rules. It doesn't make any sense. But it's one of those things we do. I think those things are a little bit of a, you know, smaller impact on the game, the way you're dressed. It's like, for everybody playing it, if you're just playing it within, you know, a park and nobody's watching you, it's not a big deal. You can play however you want. But, you know, I think a lot of these people are coining vintage baseball because they saw something and they're recreating it. But the only thing they've really adopted is no gloves. You know, everything else is just some other version of a stick and bat,
right.
You know, bat and ball game that's so, not 1860s baseball.
Now, and if you want to make alterations to the rules, whatever, but tell people that you've made alterations to those rules.
Right.
And teach people how it really was.
Right. And I think that's a big issue, too, because it's like, you know, there's these captains on these teams that, you know, really know the rules and they've made adjustments as such, and they know, oh, this is the way it was and this is how we're doing it, and we know there's a difference. But I don't think that's always conveyed to their players, because some of the guys who've been playing for 3 or 4 years, even you ask them about this rule, like, oh, yeah, this is how it is. This is how it was. And we're like, no, like, there was no two-stride lead. Maybe you guys play that way, but nobody's told you that that's not how it was done in 1860s. And, you know, another one that I've seen more frequently this year, and I'm not sure why, maybe it's just some of the clubs we've played, but there's a lot of teams playing by modern lineup.
Oh.
And that makes no sense to me.
That's my biggest... I hate it.
It just says, I mean, I have friends who are playing on these clubs, and, you know, nothing personal against them, but it's just... I don't understand the reasoning for playing it, and I've asked some of them, and some of them are like, oh, you know, it's like, oh, you know, we don't want the same person batting four times when someone only gets one at-bat. And it's like, I get that you want people to be involved, but at the same time, it's like...
That scenario, even though it's possible, does not happen a lot.
Yeah.
Okay? So the rationale of we want everyone to get equal amount of at-bats is the equivalent of everybody getting a trophy.
Right.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
You didn't get the same. Well, who cares? Hit better.
Yeah.
Get more at bats.
Oh, it's the 1860s. They didn't have equality yet.
I'm so glad. I'm getting old and bitter like Paul Hunkley. and then I talked to him like I talked to him today, and I realized, well, I'm not quite that bitter.
But I mean, I've heard of other, you know, like I try and, you know, get other opinions on it, and like, oh, why are you playing that way? And some of them are just like, oh, it's easier. And like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it's easier to play baseball with a glove. Why are you playing barehanded? It's right. Easier to hit a ball with a metal bat, hit it farther. Why are you not? We're using metal bat. None of these are vintage, but if you're adopting one thing that's not vintage, why don't you just right. adopt everything and go play softball or go play in a hardwood bat league or, you know, play a version that's not 1860 baseball, because, you know, it's like there's so many people who are being introduced to the game. It's great. Like, I mean, I know there's some, you know, difficulties getting rostered players and stuff for some teams, but there's so many teams out there and so many new people who are getting eyes on the game that have never seen it or heard about it, and they're just kind of getting the wrong information because people just don't know. Even some people involved don't know how it was done, and they're spreading the wrong information. And these people show up to a game, and they think that, you know, runners can only steal if a catcher makes an error.
Right. So I like to make a jab at Paul Hunkley once in a while because I know he listens. He actually listens to these episodes. So, Paul, obviously, I'm just making fun. I mean no disrespect to one of my mentors, but listen, the Mount Clemens – right or no, yeah, say it right or he'll be on me. The regular baseball club of Mount Clemens, Michigan, they do play by the correct rules or the original rules. And their team is not built for that.
No.
No.
Honestly,
they have zero advantage by playing by those rules.
I agree. Like, I think, honestly, they'd be one of those teams that, you know, may benefit from playing only stealing on a muff or, you know, two-stride lead. That would make them a better team, but I really respect them for playing the way they do and playing the way it was played. And, you know, like same thing where it's like, oh, the other restriction that we see quite frequently is you know, basemen that can only play two strides off of a bag. And I think all that evidence was based on one photo where there was a runner in motion who was stealing, and, you know, it's like, oh, the third baseman's playing close to third base because, well, it's a right-handed hitter. And the second baseman's playing close to second because there's a runner stealing from first to second. And the first baseman's close to first because, well, the runner was just on first. You know, and it's just like those little things that it's like, you know, some teams may benefit from them if they're not really built for it, but unless you're educating the fans on the difference, which, you know, I will really hand it to Greenfield Village and everything they've done, you know, this weekend and everything beyond, and I'm sure they'll do in the future, where it's like they have really one major restriction, which is the stealing on first contact. But, you know, they have Marcus Dixon or, you know, somebody else on the hill who's announcing to the fans. And if anybody asks the question, like, oh, why is he stealing so late? They're able to answer it and say, hey, this is a modern restriction that we've introduced to this game because we think it becomes more watchable for the spectators.
Right.
And when they have, you know, 500 people like they're out there today, you know, you want an educational game, but also an entertaining game for the spectators. So it's like, at least, you know, they're doing a really good job at least making sure that the people are given the correct information, even if it's not exactly the way it was done.
Right. And now we're about to name all of the clubs that need to get their stuff together. Mike, you start.
Well, Modern Lineup, Royal Oak, and Northville. Those are the one, two that come to mind. They're the ones that...
You know, Rockford.
Rockford, the modern lineup as well.
Now, I don't know if they're still doing that. So if you guys want to correct me, Fallsburg Flats.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so yep. That was Modern Lineup.
Yeah. And I know they did free backs as well on foul balls. And we're playing them tomorrow.
Come on, you guys.
We're playing them tomorrow morning, so we'll talk to them.
They're not
and see
playing
what
free backs tomorrow.
No, they're not. We're going to take advantage of that.
Now, when I do say something on the podcast about a club like that, listen, I just call it like I see it. I don't care a lot. Like, life is bigger than vintage baseball. But I also don't hide what I feel, but I also feel like my opinion means absolutely nothing. So don't think that when I or a guest is like, hey, I didn't think Mike was actually going to name teams. When he did, I was glad.
I knew you weren't either, but at the same time, it's like, you know, it's like Royal Oak and Northville are two clubs that we play frequently, you know, and it's like they play by the modern lineup. And this isn't saying like, oh, we're not going to schedule them next year because they play by it. You know, it's like, we're still going to play them.
Absolutely.
Nothing's going to change. We still want to play baseball, but it's like, you know, it's not really easier to do, you know, and it takes away some strategy from the way the game was actually played.
Yes.
And it's like, not everybody has to, you know, I wouldn't say, oh, we want everybody to do the same exact thing and everybody has to conform to these rules, but at least, you know, make sure all your players are aware that wasn't historically accurate.
Northville's a very good team.
They are.
I wish Northville would come and be a team at the Worlds. How can we make that happen? I'd like to see them.
I believe they're at the Silver Ball this weekend out in New York.
They do the Silver Ball a lot.
Yeah.
I'd like them to not.
And I mean, if somebody on Northville's listening, you know, please correct me if, you know, this is wrong information, but I think they really are, you know, stuck to their two-stride lead-off stealing on a muff. And I believe that's what's done out at Silver Ball, which I could be wrong on as well because I haven't been out there. But it seems like every time we play, you know, we play Northville or hear of a club playing Northville, they seem to be kind of stuck to those stipulations where they're not open to the idea of, you know, first contact stealing or even, you know, or unrestricted stealing. And, I mean, that could be one of the reasons they haven't been to the World Tournament. I'm not really sure because, like, we played them this year and we had one of our most fantastic matches with them this season. I mean, it was a one-run game. It was 5-4, you know, and we played, you know, on the bound, which we're more than happy to do. And, you know, we played by the modern lineup, and that, you know, that's the way the game was played for them, and that's fine. But, like, you know, they are a fantastic team with some incredible athletes on that team, and it's like even their veteran players, you know, it's like they still have, you know, all the baseball tools there. And, like, I would love, you know, they would very possibly be one of the semifinalists tomorrow if they were in this tournament. Like, they could have beat anybody out there today.
Yeah, they've gotten really good. The best thing about Northville, though, is the board with the cups on it, so everybody knows which cup is theirs.
Yes.
That's my favorite part.
That hill in right field that there's is my least favorite part of Northville.
So no offense to Rockford or the Wahoos, you said, do that?
I believe the Wahoos play by modern lineup, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
and Northville, we love you.
That being said, I know Royal Oak, they will adjust. Last year, I believe it was last season, they came to our field, and they were happy to play. You know, we play the same version that they do at Greenfield Village here with the 1867 with slightly restricted stealing. They were more than happy to, you know, play our version of the game, you know, and I thought that was really cool of them to be able to do that when they travel, and they have their home rules, but they're happy to adjust.
But nobody decides to not schedule teams because of things like that. So
I disagree. I feel like some people may, but we're not one of those teams.
Well, some people definitely don't schedule Mount Clemens because of things.
Right, and speaking on that, I actually talked to Silverback, the captain of Bay City, earlier this week, and we have a match coming up in September 19th, I believe, in Canton. And I called him and I was like, "Hey, are you guys okay with playing unrestricted at our field? And we're going to be doing an 1867 unrestricted stealing, you know, straight true to the Annie's book." against Bay City later on the season. We're really looking forward to that because, you know, especially like you said, like that dead ball thing, like once we played at Gettysburg and came back, the game just feels so much slower now that there's...
Let me ask you about something that ticked me off today.
Yeah.
That I think I only brought up once in one of these small episodes is all the pitchers being taken.
Yeah.
Have you noticed?
Quite a few. Yeah. I'm a little surprised they didn't start calling balls and strikes a little quicker.
Yeah.
But I'm someone as well that'll, you know, I sit up there and watch pitches. And unless they're calling them, which I want them to, I'm going to wait for my pitch kind of thing.
Right. Right. You have no reason. If you're waiting for a pitch, wait for it, I guess.
I mean, I'm on Walnut One. I'm trying to hit those trees out in right center. If they're pitching me inside,
but it seems
not
like
calling strikes.
It
I'm
seems
waiting.
Like in our area, they're not going to balls and strikes very fast. On the East Coast, they're going to it a pitch or two into the at-bat. Happy medium probably works there.
I agree. I feel like in the past, the Village, especially at the tournament, has called them a little earlier just because they're trying to speed games up. But I feel like this year they didn't start calling them as early. It's like, you see, there's been some, you know, a couple matches we had, and, you know, there's like maybe eight pitches thrown, you know, four decent, four not so much, and there's no warnings, which, I mean, is okay. Nothing wrong with it. But, you know, it just especially when you're working with that time limit to only get in five or six innings in a game that could totally be, you know, have a different outcome if it played a full nine. You know, it's, you know, it could be a very drastic change in the way the brackets shake up.
I feel like we have a lot of complaints, but what? It's quite the opposite. We love vintage baseball.
Yes.
And you know, you're looking at youth and skill and old and toast, and we still love it just the same. And I don't know what else to say about that.
Yeah, I absolutely love this game, and that's part of the reason too. I think that I'm, you know, it bothers me a little bit when people do it so wrong and at least don't even know, or it's just like, I want this game to grow as big as possible. And I think a good way of doing that is spreading the proper information, because if people are just playing by, you know, these extremely modified rules and don't even know that they're being modified, and the spectator picks it up and they use those rules and then change something else, it can just totally snowball into something that it's not, you know, kind of like that game of telephone. It started with the 1867 rules, and it's expanded, and it's just gone on to be something that it's not. And hopefully it never gets to that point. So we're really trying
to. So we got a couple more minutes left here.
Yeah.
This is my last interview of the night. So we can touch on something here. The NAVB, one of the reasons it exists. Now we get a little blowback about, you're starting a softball league and blah, blah. No.
Right.
No,
right.
We're not. And one of the reasons why we're trying to start this exclusive club, I guess is one way you could put it, is because we want to have control over doing it the right way. Now, we do not play. We do not dictate a lot of things. But
correct.
There is no edict on playing by correct rules from the 1860s.
Yeah.
And but that's because the reasoning for that is we would never have a league.
Yeah.
If we made people play by those rules, they would simply say, no, thanks.
Yeah, pretty much.
But we have, so people that know we exist, the NAVB, and have sat back and wanted to see how it would go, or weren't interested in joining because of stuff, We have taken notes. We, all five of us on the board, have watched what we've done in the first COVID. And we know that we don't want to do certain things that we've had to start with. So there's a revamping coming. I don't know what it is, but there's a revamping coming. And just know it's a safe place for clubs.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's going to become safer.
Right. I mean, it's definitely something that we want to grow, you know, to as big as possible, and we want to include as many people as possible is the long-term goal.
Yeah,
but, you know,
we don't want to shut people out.
Right. Yeah, no, and we're not trying to get, we only want eight teams and cancel everybody else out because they're not in those eight, you know. You know, it's something that we really want to grow and get as many teams involved in as possible. And, I think, you know, just touching back on things, we want some things to be, you know, historically accurate, or at least – you know, at least be aware of the historical accuracy. It's like this year, more than any year, I've seen guys playing in T-shirts, which is totally fine as a pickup thing. But it's like if you're if you're at a festival or an event or a tournament or even a single game, it's like you have these uniforms, and yeah, I get it's hot out, but it's like comes back to the same thing. It's like, why aren't you just, you know, oh, it's easier to just wear a t-shirt. Well, yeah, obviously, and it's easier to swing a metal bat. It's easier to catch a ball with a glove. It's you know, the same thing.
Yeah, if I I'm so old and bitter right now, Mike, that if I were to take the field with another team that shows up with a couple of dudes in sweatpants and t-shirts, I might just walk off. That's how bitter I am at this point.
And I get that uniforms are expensive, and if you know, if you have eight guys and you have to grab somebody last minute, they don't have a pair of vintage baseball pants and they have a pair of, you know, black joggers.
But it's okay. one of the main things.
Yeah. Well, I just mean in general with vintage baseball where it's like, oh, you need one guy. You know, these teams that have been in the league are all established clubs for the most part and have nine rostered guys with uniforms. And, you know, throughout vintage baseball, that's not, you know, that's not always the case. You know, sometimes, oh, we only got six guys on our roster that can make this game. We need to find three and try and dress them up. And I know the uniforms are expensive, but I feel like not only is it, you know, not always being conducted properly, but, like, some teams are just not even making an effort to try and make it vintage uniform on a new guy.
Yeah. It's our main selling point. When you're – it's the first thing people see. It's the number one on the list.
Right.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it with your t-shirts and your sweatpants.
And now I'm going to get letters because our uniforms aren't historically accurate to 1867, the rules we play by. But I think if you see a vintage baseball uniform, it sticks out. It looks different. They're in uniform. You're like, oh, okay, what is this? And it just piques the interest, and especially if you can explain the differences to them.
If more people came to your haunt, would you have better uniforms?
Yes.
Okay.
DerangedHaunt.com, Romulus, Michigan, opening September 17th.
Oh, we're ending on that note. Mike, before we go, anything else?
No. Thank you for having me.
I know you listen to some of the episodes. You don't have any criticisms because I'm open to it.
No. I think they're great and looking forward to hearing more.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Live, not for you, but for me, from Mugley's, the restaurant bar in the Best Western at Greenfield Village, the Salmon Palace. We're out of here. Say goodbye, Mike.
Post-game goodbye, show Mike. Is brought to you by Christ. I can't find it. The hell with it.